When these chapters have been mastered, you will know how to own your own mind. First of all, find out what you would like most to do. Then, lay out plans to begin doing it, and begin, right where you are, to carry out your plans. Recognize now and forever that whatever you get from life will depend upon what you give to life. The combined wisdom and genius of mankind cannot conceive of an argument against the liberty of thought. Think before acting, not afterward. Those who discover their dormant creative vision and put it to work will make jobs for themselves, just as others before them have done. The others will go on down the dusty road to failure in the midst of an abundance of opportunities, just as this class always has done. Two things are essential for the unfolding and use of creative vision. One is a willingness to work, and the other is a definite motive sufficient to inspire one to go the extra mile with the right mental attitude. Search as you may, but you cannot find anything to take the place of these. Work and motive by themselves are not sufficient guarantees of enduring success. Ideas are the beginning of all achievements. They are the seedlings of all progress. There is no such reality as something for nothing or something for less than its true value. After a man has attracted favorable attention to himself by the habit of going the extra mile, he is then in a position to adopt a definite major purpose and to begin expressing it in action through a definite plan. Obsessional desire is the state of mind which serves to clear the mind of fear and doubt and self-imposed limitations, thereby opening the way for that state of mind known as faith. When you adopt a definite major purpose, you must focus all your emotional feeling on the object of that purpose, in a spirit of absolute belief in its attainment. Let your daily slogan be, "You can do it," if you believe you can. By some strange power with which no one is familiar, the subconscious mind acts directly and immediately upon the thoughts which are based upon absolute belief. All great leaders are able believers. There are certain basic requirements of success in which one must believe in order to succeed. Some of them are belief in infinite intelligence, belief in oneself, belief in one's chosen associates, belief in right over wrong, that right will prevail if one persists in believing in right, belief in the proven laws and facts of science, belief in the power of the mind to connect itself with infinite intelligence and become, therefore, irresistible. The greatest power available to mankind is an intangible power, neither the nature nor the source of which is understood. It is man's only irresistible power. Stated in one sentence, it is the capacity of men to believe in something. Just that alone, without any modifying definitions, the simple, clearly demonstrable power of belief. The power that has worked miracles down through the ages. Not all the scientific knowledge known to mankind can cope with this intangible form of power. It has nothing in common with logic or reason, and it overrides both at will. It is a law unto itself, and the strangest feature of this power is that it can be appropriated and used by the humblest person the same as by the most educated and renowned. Go as far back as you please, and you will discover that the strong men, the great men, the successful men, have been those who believed in something. The world belongs to men who believe. It always has, and it always will. In organizing your mind power, be sure to include in your plans a definite program of belief in the things you wish to become real. Let your belief be positive. Believe in something, not against something, remembering meanwhile that belief is contagious, that belief in one thing tends to open the way for belief in many things, while unbelief works in the same manner. No one can rise above mediocrity unless he believes in his own ability to become and to remain self-determining. A disorganized mind can never be free. The mind develops and becomes strong only through action. Even belief is useless unless it is followed by some sort of action appropriate to its nature and purpose. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeoning of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. Yes, one may become the captain of his soul if he will take possession of his own mind, organize it, and express it in terms of organized endeavor behind definiteness of purpose. Men may lose all their worldly possessions, including sound health. They may be cheated, imposed upon, maligned, and slandered by others, or they may be unjustly thrown into prison and deprived of their physical liberty. But they still may think their own thoughts and use their own mind power without the consent of any other person. Whatever man desires, he may acquire with the aid of his power of thought, provided he will organize his thoughts and apply his thought power in a spirit of belief in his own ability to make it serve his needs. Thought applied in a spirit of belief unlocks prison doors and gives men their freedom. It develops body resistance and frees men from disease where everything else fails. It supplants poverty with opulence. It dispels fear, worry, and discouragement and fills their places with hope, faith, and peace of mind. It works with the speed of lightning, requiring nothing but a determined will to put it into action. Opinions are the freest thing in the world, and most of them are worth exactly what they cost. Nothing. Accurate thinkers permit no one to do their thinking for them. They ascertain the sources of such facts as they desire and make wise use of the sources for their guidance. Learn to be cautious and to use your own judgment, no matter who is trying to influence you. Before being influenced too far by your emotions, give your reasoning faculty, your head, a chance to pass judgment on the business at hand. The head is always more dependable than the emotions, the heart. The person who forgets this generally lives to regret his neglect. Let your mind be always an eternal question mark, not in the sense of being a confirmed skeptic who believes in nothing, but as a cautious person who wishes to be accurate in his thinking. Question everything and everyone until you satisfy yourself that you are dealing with facts. Do this quietly in the silence of your own mind. the emotions of love and sex. Either of these emotions may easily override facts and render the faculty of reason useless. Don't let them do it. Hatred, anger, jealousy, fear, revenge, greed, vanity, egotism, procrastination, and the desire for something for nothing. These emotions frequently distort facts. You've been given three important fact-finding departments of the mind, namely, 1, the power of will, 2, the faculty of reason, and 3, the faculty of conscience. These departments of the mind become strong and reliable only through discipline, training, and use. Give them a chance to pass on everything you wish to accept as facts. Form the habit of relying upon their decisions. Be very careful about accepting as facts anything that originates in these three areas of the mind. 1, the five senses, 2, the emotions, and 3, the memory. All three of these sources are faulty, and they require the strictest of self-discipline before they become dependable. Gain control of your mind, force it to feed upon thoughts of your own choosing, and you will then be in reality the master of your fate, the captain of your soul. Repetition of thought creates thought habits in the mind, which cause the mind to go right on working on an idea without one's conscious effort. Definiteness of purpose, backed with a form of persistence that assumes the proportions of an obsession, is the greatest of all stimulants of both the synthetic and the creative forms of imagination. The mind of man is provided with a power which forces the subconscious mind to accept and to act upon obsessional desires that are definitely planned. Every adversity brings with it the seed of an equivalent benefit. A man generally finds whatever he is looking for if he gives his desire obsessional proportions. To get more from life, one must give more. This is a truism from which no man can escape. Nature fixed it in all natural laws. Therefore, it is not a man-made rule. Apparently, the subconscious concerns itself first with those thoughts which have become habits, and especially if the thoughts have been strongly emotionalized by a deep and burning desire for their realization. Desire, based on a definite motive, is the beginning of all voluntary thought action associated with individual achievement. The presence in the mind of an intense desire tends to stimulate the faculty of imagination with the purpose of creating ways and means of attaining the object of the desire. If the desire is persistently held in the mind through repetition of thought, it is picked up by the subconscious section of the mind and automatically carried out to its logical conclusion by the most practical means available. Thoughts are things, said a great philosopher, and it is significant that thought is one of the few things an individual may control completely. It may not be literally true that thoughts are things, but it is true that thoughts create things, and the things they create are striking duplicates of the thoughts out of which they are fashioned. Thought magnetizes one's entire physical body and attracts to one the outward physical things which harmonize. Observe that the memory, the five senses, and the emotions require constant self-discipline, that they are not reliable without the strictest of discipline, and that they need highly organized attention to bring them under control. This control is obtained by the exercise of the power of will through the adoption of voluntary habits. Through the application of self-discipline, thought can be influenced, controlled, and directed through transmutation toward a desired end by the development of voluntary habits suitable for the attainment of any given end. All of man's achievements begin in the form of thought, organized into plans, aims, and purposes, and expressed in terms of action. Both the subconscious and the conscious sections of the mind work in response to habits, adjusting themselves to whatever habits the individual may form, whether the habits are voluntary or involuntary. When habits are once formed, the mind proceeds to carry them out automatically unless they are modified by other and stronger habits. The five senses are so untrustworthy that they can be easily deceived, especially when they function under emotional excitement, such as fear, love, sex, or in fact any of the other emotions, without the balancing influence of the faculty of reason. We must face the fact that most of that which we express as our individual belief is but a reflection of the belief or pretended belief of those nearest us. If there is one tragedy greater than all others that can overtake an individual, it is that of being robbed at birth of his God-given right to take possession of his own mind and use it in his own way. The mind absorbs any idea to which it is repeatedly submitted, whether the idea be sound or unsound, right or wrong. We are here dealing with the real power behind human achievements, the power that is responsible, through its misuse, for much human misery, the power that brings success or failure according to the way it is applied. Let us assume that we are actually taking a physical picture of the power of thought, using the mind as the sensitive plate of the camera and controlled habit as the lens through which any desired object may be photographed. The plate of the camera will register any object reflected upon it through the lens. It does not pick and choose, but registers everything that is cast upon it, whether good or bad. To make a clear picture, the lens must be properly focused, and the object to be photographed must be flooded with the proper amount of light, all of which depends upon the skill of the person operating the camera. The picture he gets will be in exact proportion to his skill in controlling all these factors. Now, let me shift the scene from the camera to the human brain and see how perfectly the two resemble one another in the manner of their operation. The individual chooses the subject he wishes to register in the cells of his brain, the brain serving as the plate of the camera. He calls the subject chosen a definite major purpose. He wants the brain to pick up a clear picture of the object of that purpose, register it, and turn it over to his subconscious mind for translation into its physical reality. Therefore, he proceeds, through the principle of controlled habit, to place in his conscious mind a picture of that which he wants. Day by day, he recreates that picture through controlled habit, recognizing, as the skilled thinker does, that the mental impulse of thought through which he is painting the picture in his brain must be given the right amount of time, through repeated exposures, to register, and it must also be accompanied by the proper proportion of light, emotional feeling, to enable the brain to pick up a clear outline of the thought. These principles will not work merely by one's having read and understood them. They must be put into action. The action must be persisted in until it becomes fixed habit. I am repeating this in many different ways because to overlook it will mean defeat. Without action, there will be no controlled habits. Without controlled habits, there will be no dependable registration in the brain of the picture of that which one desires. There will be nothing which the subconscious mind can take over and act upon. The faculty of the will is the boss of all other departments of the mind. It can make habits and it can unmake them. It can choose aims and purposes, and it can change them. It can countermand any desire of the emotions and set aside any decision of the faculty of reason. The faculty of the will is the tool with which one paints a clear picture of that which one desires, and it does this by presenting that picture in the conscious mind repeatedly. This repetition of desire or purpose followed by appropriate action in carrying out the desire or purpose, is the method by which controlled habit is formed. If the faculty of the will is sufficiently determined, as it is when one's definite major purpose is an obsession, it can and does call into action every other region of the mind. Organized thought is a mixture of the power of will and the power of the emotions, properly balanced and directed to the attainment of definite ends. Disorganized thought is that which is inspired by the emotions, without the modifying influence of the will, that is, emotion without control. That sort of thought is without value. It may be, and it usually is, very dangerous. It always is dangerous if it is not modified by the faculty of reason. The faculty of willpower is the medium that may be used to balance the relationship between the emotions and the faculty of reason. Your emotions are not always reliable, and generally they influence you to reach decisions regardless of facts. You will know when a habit has been properly established by your own state of mind and by the results you get from it. When the habit has been properly developed, you will experience a feeling of continuous enthusiasm in connection with your plans. This enthusiasm will drive you during your every conscious moment. It will even continue driving you through your subconscious mind while you sleep. Work will no longer be a drudge. It will be a pleasure in which you will engage as eagerly as you eat your meals when hungry. Moreover, things will begin to happen outside your own mind that will give you courage. Your imagination will become keener and more active. You can work long hours without becoming fatigued. You will experience better health than you ever had before. The dark glasses of despair you have been wearing will change their color, and you will see the whole world around you through crystal clear glasses of hope and faith. For you will have changed the entire vibration of your being. This is no idle promise. I know it will be realized by you. Defeat may overtake you, as it overtakes everyone, but you will use it as a challenge to greater effort because you will have discovered that organized thought is an irresistible force capable of making stepping stones out of stumbling blocks. How, may I ask, could anyone be permanently defeated who has acquired the ability to transmute every emotion, every feeling, every fear, and every worry into a constructive, positive driving force for the attainment of definite ends? And this is precisely what organized thought enables one to do. First step, the adoption of a definite major purpose. Second step, the creation of a practical plan for attaining the purpose. Third step, a mastermind alliance with others whose experience, education, skill, and influence may be needed. Fourth step, immediate action in carrying out the plan adopted. Observe that all four steps are well within the possibility of easy control by anyone, but nothing will happen unless all four steps are taken and persistently carried out to their logical conclusion. This calls for controlled habit. It calls for constant application of the necessary habits until the object desired has been attained. How inconsistent it is that the only thing over which a human being has complete control is the one thing which most people make the least attempt to control. The inconsistency becomes all the more astounding when one recognizes the fact that the power of organized thought offers the solution to all of one's problems and nothing else does.